show's mission is to give you the knowledge, tools, and power to achieve success whether you're starting a small business or already have one. I'm Jack Mancini, and I'm here with my business partner, Adam Sunholder.
Each week, we'll be talking business, small business, drawing on our collective experience of having owned and operated 20 small companies and coached and advised hundreds more. Dirty Secrets of Small Business will debunk the common myths of business ownership, expose the impact of government regulation, share small business success stories, and reveal dirty secrets of small business.
In today's show, we're going to be focusing on four segments. And the first segment is going to be our common myths of small business ownership. And the one we're going to talk about today is friends and family make the best hires to fill voids in experience. We're going to explore that a little bit here.
All right.
The next one is dirty secret of the week. And then the third segment is how come, what's on my mind. It's going to start with something I picked up over the weekend. Not any illness, just an idea or two. And I'm going to start with how come this, that, and you'll get into it or you'll hear me more in a few minutes here. And then the fourth segment is small business success stories, where my partner here, Adam, is going to get into one of our many, many success stories from our coaching career. You know, a little factoid here is that most business owners are stuck in a state of how. How do I make a profit plan? How do I present my company? How do I create a marketing plan? How do I find good people? The list of how questions is endless. We're Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're business coaches. We help small business owners get unstuck from that state of how.
Give us a call, 877-849-0670. That's 877-849-0670. Or better yet, visit us at MaximumVP.com. All right, as Jack mentioned earlier, our common myth this week, it's one that I'm sure that almost every business owner can relate to, because chances are some of their first hires, or maybe in many cases, their only hires so far, which have been friends and family. And the idea here is that we're trying to debunk that myth, Jack, that you know, that friends and family make the best hires to fill voids and experience. And it's one of those things that you can see it, and trust is a big deal when it comes to small business. And it's often a hassle to try to go find good people. So if you look at your friends and family, often those are folks that you trust a lot. And so to bring them into the business, they're folks that you can lean on and often abdicate things to. You throw things their way and assume that they're going to do the best and you can fully trust them. So often people will bring in friends and family as those first hires, or they'll use them to fill voids in the company. We've seen that a lot.
Well, they fill voids, and my take, Adam, and you know me better than most people here, that is so not true. What is so not true? Bringing in friends and family. It always sounds good. That's why it's done. People starting a business or have a business, they get frustrated. That's the natural ebb and flow of it. And by God, I'm going to bring in my cousin. He has these skills. Now, sometimes it can work, but usually it doesn't. Again, that's my experience, and I think if I were to dig deep and Google it, I'd probably find a lot of evidence that supports the fact that business doesn't necessarily thrive with friends and family.
You know, one of the fun things that Jack and I always have fun with, it's a great test of our relationship with our clients. Quite often, they'll want to bring their spouses in. We've had a couple of these happen, you know, just recently. We actually had one just happen last week that you missed, Jack. Where you know, here's a newer client of ours who's bringing in his wife to take care, and it's often taking care of the administrative stuff, right? And I know it well from my parents having done it for almost 40 years. That was my mom's duties. You know, she took care of the books and was very trusted. My dad was fine doing that. So quite often you'll see the spouse come in to handle a lot of those things, handling the money part of things, right? Whether they're quite qualified for it or not, they're certainly trusted.
For the most part, or at least they hope right. They are, and they usually are. I think that's true.
So we always have that discussion. We're always very upfront with them. We say, look, so, you know, we strongly, strongly caution you against that and advise against it because you're not objective. It's your spouse.
Sure. One of the biggest reasons, you can't escape them. So Thanksgiving dinner, you know, if you had a battle the night before or some issues going on in the company, it just trails you around, you know, like a bad cold. I mean, you just can't get rid of it. And it seems like the problems are often more talked about than the celebrations. We have to often tell our clients to celebrate. It's amazing how the problem-solving mode, which makes sense when you start to dissect it, just sort of takes over the mentality. You know, I was reading a blogger, a guy named Adam Callahan.
That's a great name.
It is. I know. That's what I thought, too. That's why I decided to read him on.
Good. All right.
But he talks about blogs, or not blogs, but bringing family and friends into a business generally doesn't work for several reasons. One is the emotion. Often, you know, your friends and family are used to you in a different way. They deal with you in a different way. So when you give them criticism about the business, they take it personally. And that doesn't work out too well. That starts to create a crack right away. And they also, they being the friends and family, have expectations that are different. They know you in a different way. And all of a sudden, you're the boss, you're the owner of the company. Well, they're still thinking of you, especially if it's an older relative or an older friend, as little Adam, you know? I mean, he hasn't grown up yet.
Yeah, or you're that buddy who was at the party and you have all these kind of drinking stories, something that kind of happened. They're thinking about you in that term or that context, which is not necessarily what you're looking for the day-to-day business side of things, right?
That's right. And family members generally know way more about the business than they should, because it's always being talked about. They can see other family members getting PO'd because of issues, and often that can spill over to the reputation of the company, too.
I think one of the points you're making here, Jack, those three points you're touching on, to me, is the highlight of leaving personal stuff at the door.
That's
what you're talking about. It's very difficult to do if you aren't thinking about it.
Oh, wait a minute. Thinking about it. We talked about that the other day. It's one of those, leave the personal stuff at the door.
Right.
Switch that off. Even though you've had a bloody argument the night before, switch it off. It's Thanksgiving after all. You know, you should be celebrating. Can't do it.
Well, a big part of the reason for that, too, is assuming you do have non-family or friends in the company, you have to be aware of just how divisive that can be. You know, it's very difficult where all of a sudden, even if it's not the case, the perception will be that the sibling, the spouse, the cousin, the parent, whoever it might be, or the best buddy is going to be getting specialized treatment.
That's
and they aren't
right.
going to be held accountable, or they can approach the boss in ways that somebody else can't. Just coming in and shooting the breeze with the boss, something that most people can't do. But if you have that relationship, somebody else can't do that. So you have to be very aware of that stuff. And so a lot of it's more subtle. Even if it's not intended, it's being perceived that way.
Even if you're aware, that's right. Even if you're aware, what can you do about it? If I've known you for 15 years and you come in, we've shared a lot of experiences in 15 years, and everyone else is going to be on the outside looking in.
Well, so we always counsel is that if you're going to bring that person in and we have our, you know, the duties or the skills laid out, that family or friend has to be way above everybody else. You know, so it's no doubt that, you know, this person is more than qualified, better than anybody else you could find out there. And so you're willing to put up with those other, you know, potential downfalls of it. But it's rarely the case. Usually it's, hey, it's somebody who I trust and their skills aren't necessarily matched up with what's needed, or nor are they necessarily the best person to have in that role.
That's right. Very difficult. You know, some pros and cons here. Pros about having family and friends might be loyalty, for sure. You know them well. You know the idiosyncrasies. You know how they are. They're trustworthy for the most part, and you can push them. You can push them, take liberty with them more so than a stranger. Some of the cons, they take advantage of you, you know, because of the relationship. Rules may not apply. They basically can be lazy, and then what do? There's bad workers, can create reputations that obviously are undesirable for your company. And they expect favoritism a lot of times. You know, after all, I'm your cousin, I'm your uncle, I'm whatever. Hey, little Adam doesn't do that to me.
Yeah, they'll keep putting guilt trips on you where it's, and again, it's often not related to the job, nor if they were working for somebody who wasn't, you know, a relative, they would never think about saying those kind of things, you know. So it's It's absolutely crazy from that standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. But yet people keep doing it. They keep doing it right. Because it's easy. It's hard going through. I'm under pressure. I need somebody. I look around. Here's Uncle Charlie. Hey, Uncle Charlie's semi-retired, or Uncle Charlie is out of work, or... And so I bring them on, and more often than not, Uncle Charlie is not the stellar employee that I hope for. Now what do? I got to fire him. Holy cripe. We talked about that.
Yeah. So, again, caution again, if you're going to bring them in, make sure they're much more qualified than anybody else. But it's very, very, be very careful and delicate with bringing friends and family in. So stick around. When we come back, we're going to reveal our dirty secret of the week. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We're business coaches. We can help you get unstuck from all those how questions in your business.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're business coaches. And we help owners of small companies get unstuck from the state of how. Don't wrestle with all those how questions on your own. We can help. We love helping small business owners get unstuck.
All right. That is very, very true, Jack. People get stuck all over the place, and often it's hard to get yourself unstuck. It's like being stuck in the mud, right?
Yeah, get that big four-wheeler, and even that doesn't help in a lot of cases.
I just have visuals back to, remember my cousin Vinny, and they were back in that thick mud, and he's spinning those tires, and you keep on going. That's why the owners feel that way sometimes. They keep on pushing on that gas pedal and keep on spinning further into that mud. All right, so we're going to be exploring our dirty secret of the week this week. And if something we say here triggers some thoughts for you, we invite you to join us here, 440-946-9468, 440-946-WINT. So our dirty secret this week is that most business advisors do not speak your language. So what I'm referring to here is folks like CPAs, attorneys, bankers, your insurance professionals. Most of them don't speak it. So let me give you a sense of what we're talking about here. So both Jack and I, even though we're small business guys now, we were exposed to corporate America for quite some time. Big companies, multi-billion dollar big companies. And when we first started working intimately with the small business market, we had to, what we affectionately call, de-corporatize ourselves. Without knowing it, we were talking past the small business owners. We were using phrases and the way we were talking about things that is not the way most owners view things. And we'd often get that kind of smiling and nodding from them. And we learned that code
that's
for...
That's a signal. That's
yeah,
right.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'm not going to raise my hand and let you know about it, right?
That's
I just
right.
Can't wait for you to kind of get out of here and we can move the topic onto something that I do know more about. So we learned pretty early that we had to kind of decorporatize ourselves and really just kind of speak more basic, plain English. Again, not dumbing things down, but just, again, to be aware of the way we were talking. We were talking in a strange language that
well, in the corporate boardroom of big companies, the language is different. It's what business school tries to teach and what college teaches. It's a very select audience. It just isn't mainstream, that's for sure. You know, I want to expand a little bit about some of these advisors. People give well-intentioned advice to small business owners, and usually that well-intentioned advice isn't based on good, hard experience. It's just what they hear. So the myth continues to be perpetuated. And when we look at business advisors, we can expand that into volunteers. People like SCORE volunteers, people who are retired, or even worse, semi-retired.
Oh, boy.
There's little or no training. They come in and basically, hey, I worked as a VP or a director of or something in a big company, and I know business. And usually the person screening that person comes in, and he has the same or she has the same problem that we encountered that Adam just talked about. It took us a couple of years to be able to speak to and understand a small business owner. If for no other reason, their world is not made up of big corporate boardrooms. And one of the problems that that advice leads to is to try to bring in advisors. And now here I am a small business owner, and I don't know how to direct those advisors. You know, I was on a panel that it was at John Carroll University, and I was representing a small business coach, and across the aisle from me was somebody who represented, when do you start to assemble a board of advisors? And a board of advisors can be, it sounds great on paper, it sounds great in the academia halls, but to be able to direct somebody who has some pretty high-level experience, and if the person who has that high-level experience doesn't realize that he's talking to a small business owner that doesn't deal in that kind of language, we're set up for failure there.
Yeah, so I think one thing you're touching on, Jack, is people will assume that, maybe the owner just assumes, hey, if I assemble this crack team to come around and help, give me great advice, so we just kind of get together and they'll be great free-flowing advice without much or any direction really at all.
That's right. You bring in a high-powered marketing executive because he's a friend or somehow you got connected and he's going to sit on your board. And he's going to give you language that you just have no idea what he's talking about. And coming back to Adam's comments here, you're sitting there nodding, smiling, and here you're the one who has to direct them. So usually those board of advisors, the company has to be in a position where they've evolved themselves, and the owner especially understands business speak. Otherwise, it's a lot of mumbo jumbo and tax laws and God knows what else that really just fall by the wayside.
Yeah, it can be very intimidating. What we see that smirk, right? That uncomfortable smirk is really, it's embarrassment at times, right? Because it's almost when you're not in on a joke or something like that, and people say stuff, you'll kind of pretend like, yeah, it's, you kind of laugh because everybody else is laughing, even though you don't necessarily get it. That's kind of the position that a lot of these owners are being put into, and it's awful. It's absolutely the wrong place to put them. And so we'll often talk about the fact of just kind of slowing things down. Because people, again, it's like going to your doctor. They'll talk hard and fast, and they're using 10-syllable words. You don't know what they mean, and it's like, wait a minute, time out. I don't know what that means. And just raise your hand and slow things down. If you don't understand, ask them to explain it in a different way.
And it's okay. It's okay to do that. There's such a huge disconnect. People, again, talking about the corporate world, we don't love the corporate world. In fact, we could never go back. I mean, never go back by a long shot. That's understating it. But you talk about a company like General Electric and their revenues. What do you think their revenue? What do you think their revenues are a year, Adam? You might know, being the Wall Street guy that you are.
It's over 100 billion.
That's right, about 150 billion. So imagine running a company that maybe is doing $1 million, $1.5 million, and the companies that we deal with are from 1 to 25 employees, and usually the sales are under 5 million. More closer to the average is somewhere around 2. So imagine working in a company that size, which 25 million companies do, either 25 million or 25 employees or less. Imagine dealing in that world and try to project a company doing 150 billion, hundreds of thousands of employees. How the heck do you do that?
It's absolutely crazy. Well, I think that's where a lot of those folks come from, and they'll try to talk that way to make it, to make it sound more important. I guess just to illustrate this point, just with a really simple, silly example, right, as far as how there's a disconnect
those
between...
Those are the best ones.
Yeah, all right.
I like those silly examples.
So we had a client, and he was doing a little marketing campaign. And part of his marketing campaign was to include a nice, crisp, new $1 bill as part of the marketing campaign, right? So he calls his banker, and that banker had been his banker for the better part of 5 years, 8 years, 10... It had been a while, okay? But this banker never quite got our client, right? So a very simple thing, and we said, look, I'd like to have 100 crisp $1 bills. He said, hey, no problem. I'll call the local branch, and I'll make sure that they're aware of it, and you can go in,
What a
Tuesday
simple
morning,
request,
right?
Isn't it? I mean, any bank should be able to do that.
No problem at all, right?
That's right.
So, of course, our client walks in, and, it took about 5 minutes to get anybody even come up to acknowledge that he was there. And they said, oh, geez, sorry, we didn't get to that yet. Well, can you come back later? He's thinking, no, I can't come back later. He said, can't you just have somebody send it to me? And so all of a sudden his banker starts quoting him the letter of the law or some policy or something. He says, all I want is $101 bills. You got to be kidding me, right? And so it's silly stuff like that that happens all the time.
That's right.
But I just don't get it. Something so simple. And this was the last part, the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. And we introduced him to somebody else within that bank that he shifted the relationship over, because it was so obvious that this banker just didn't get him.
That's right. That happens so much. That's that big disconnect. I'm working with a big organization now. I got to deal with the people on the consumer side, the retail side, and I'm talking big company lingo. And I'm not cementing relationships and making them stronger. I'm making them worse.
Right.
So you got to watch this so-called expert advice. It's a pretty perilous journey when you go through it.
So I think the one key piece of advice to kind of keep in mind here that we're going to encourage you as an owner is make sure to slow them down and try to use this phrase. It's one of our favorite phrases. If you don't know what they're talking about, raise your hand up and say, I'm confused. Put it back on them to explain it to you in a better way so that you can say, I'm confused, right? And that way, because usually they're thinking, how can you be confused? Again, I'm confused. So use that phrase.
That's the catch-all. That's your parachute.
That'll work very, very well. So that was our Dirty Secret this week. I am Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We're business coaches. We can help you get unstuck from all those how questions in your business.
Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sunhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're business coaches who help owners of small companies get unstuck from the state of how. Don't wrestle with all those how questions on your own. We can help. We love helping small business owners get unstuck, and we've done it often.
That's right. And if you're confused, often you have questions that begin with those how words, as Jack's talking about, the how questions, as we affectionately refer to, that we hear our clients talk about all the time. All right. So we're at the point of our show here where we're affectionately calling it, although we might change the title. We're calling it the how it comes section, but it may be the I'm confused section too. We'll see how it goes. But the how it come part, we're going to explore and discuss what's on Jack's mind. And I'm curious to see. I know you had a lot of windshield time here this weekend, so he has a lot of things probably on his mind kind of going through. If you're invited to join us as part of this discussion as well, our number here is 440-946-9468. That's 440-946-WINT. All right, Jack, so I'm curious, what's on your mind?
Hey, you know, I had a driving trip today. I was watching my grandson play rugby in Charlotte. So I was on the interstate highway system quite a bit.
Excellent. It's about a 16-hour round trip from here, right?
Something that's a little longer than I care for. But I had one question that I was kept coming to mind. How come there's interstate highways in Hawaii? I do have an answer for that, but I don't think many people do that, you know? And yeah, how do you connect? How do you connect from state to state? A little bit body of water here that we got to contend with. I don't know if I'll tell the secret to that. But the reason is that really it's a misnomer. Not all interstates physically go from one state to another, obviously. But the name implies that the roads receive federal funding.
Wait a minute.
That's what it is.
Well, so I was just going to ask you, do they have them in Alaska too?
I believe they do.
They must, right?
Hawaii has, I think, H1. I think that's what they call it. Connects the islands, I'm not sure. I didn't dig too deep.
All right.
But it was a question that was coming to mind. But that's not my how come. That's not the how come for today.
I was going to ask about Puerto Rico next. Okay, go ahead. Wait, that's not a state. Never mind. All right.
Okay. My how come for today is, how come the federal government sees fit once again to create a new regulation? Now, this time it's the new federal overtime pay regulation. I mean, every time we're turning around, the government's sticking their nose in our business. And it's not the way to gain prosperity. I am absolutely convinced of that. So currently, what this is, currently, if you're a salaried worker and you make over $23,660, you are not eligible for overtime pay. If you're under that amount, or if you're hourly, generally, you are eligible for overtime pay. So if you're making less than $23,660, you're eligible for overtime. Now, under the salary worker, under this, you know, we come December, that's all going to change. The threshold under which salary workers will automatically qualify for overtime will go to $47,476. And that's jumped up from the $23,660. Why in the world these amounts and they aren't rounded off? That drives me crazy too, but that's another story. Right. It's sort of, whenever you have numbers like that, that aren't ending in zeros, like rounding it off to thousands or hundreds, you know, that implies perfection. You know, some huge model here, which is almost 100% accurate. Like the old bookkeeping.
Oh,
days,
yeah, I know. Whenever we do projections, you always want to make sure that they aren't exact like that. So, okay, so they're more than doubling it. So from 23.6 to 47.4. Okay, so they're more than doubling this thing. Why?
Good question. Okay. So you're going to be eligible for overtime if you're under 47.476 next year. Okay, why do they keep doing that? Well, you know, here, Joe Biden, you know who he is? If we were to take a test here, I wonder how many people would know Joe Biden and know the fact that he's the Vice President of the United States. He says, this is the new rule here. He calls it a rule. The rule goes to the heart of the defining issue of our time. That is returning and expanding access to the middle class. Now, you're looking, you're furrowing your eyebrows to me there. And I understand, too. When I read that, I said, what in the world he's talking about? All I could think of while I'm driving on the interstate here is what a bunch of crap.
Right.
So here we're going to double it, and a lot more people are going to be eligible for overtime. And basically, somebody's got to pay for that stuff. Who's going to do it? How will it be paid for? So you're running a small business, and all of a sudden, more people are eligible for overtime by a mandate of a government who doesn't quite understand what's going on. And what's your alternative? You're going to take those salary workers, the higher paid people, and put more work on their shoulders. I mean, that's one of your choices. Or you're going to hire very low-cost workers.
Right, so anybody's over that so number, right?
How does that help pursuit of profits? And how does that help making your company better? You know, there's no clue. I mean, they don't have a clue.
So this is going to push. What's the likely outcome here? So people are going to be making $47,477. That'll be the starting salary for anybody? Anybody, right? Anybody's below that, why put them on salary? The whole discussion, we have a discussion a lot with our clients between salary versus hourly stuff, right? And it's a different mentality. And, you know, salary, part of it is, well, 40-hour weeks, the whole idea of the 40-hour work week is, you know, it's not real.
Wait, don't 40-hour right. work weeks go back and into the dustbin right. of history here. I mean, it serves no purpose today. I mean, not a good, valid purpose. It's a union-driven kind of thing. Right. It's a industrialized sort of mentality where the world around us is changing dramatically, but yet we're all sucked into this 40-hour work week.
Yeah, you see, you know, there's popular books out there the last several years, like the 4-hour work week. If you talk to almost any millennial, the idea out there is that they aren't shooting for the 40 hours. They're trying to kind of use that term of work-life balance piece of it. You know, they're trying not to work that much. I think a lot of them had seen their parents working a ton, and they don't want to work as much, or they view the world a little differently. So, again, he's talking about this law, he being Joe Biden, as a way to help the middle class or to help to reestablish the middle class.
Get back into the middle class.
Okay.
So, yeah, by
I thought I was going to say something about like kind of family stuff and getting people to work a little bit less or add additional employment. Because they're always trying to create jobs. This is a way to create jobs, or also I'm going to limit what you're... It's kind of like what happened with the healthcare stuff a few years ago, right, with the Affordable Care Act, and you had... The mandate, I think it was at 25 hours, whatever it was, that if you had part-time status above that. Okay, so people then, the companies usually modify it. So, well, instead of working 25 hours, Jack, you're going to work 23 hours now. And so we don't have to give you that benefit. So this is not going to have the desired result here is for this. Chances are it's not going to happen.
I'm thinking long and hard about the benefits of this. You know, running a company... And I've had my opportunities to run many small businesses. This kind of mandate just makes my pursuit of profit much more difficult. And I'm in business to make profit. I'm not in business to do other things. Now, I'll share those profits. I'll put incentives into a company. You know, I'm that kind of an owner. And I think there's many owners who are like that. You know, this word greed, which has its own ramifications here, which we'll talk about some other day, that doesn't apply to most business owners. If you have good employees, a good business owner is going to share the profits with them. And that's how a company, if the focus is on the organization called the company and the company gets better, they're going to get better. And as a business owner, I'm offering an opportunity out there for people of different skill levels. And I should have the opportunity myself to hire those people and move them accordingly. And they, in turn, should be able to consult with me, and between us, we don't lose touch of what the organization needs, and we try to balance those needs with the personal lives of everybody else. And it becomes quite easy when that's the case, and personally, I like that. You know, if we don't have a retail store that has regular hours, and it's the kind of company where, or a production facility where you have to be at a certain place at a certain time, why not? You know, if you want to work at 4 a.m, Adam, you should be allowed to do that to finish the projects. If you like to work on Sundays, that's your business. We need this done, and you find a way to get it done. What's wrong with that? Rather than get this overtime stuff and all this other nonsense, which seems more politically driven than certainly small business equity and righteousness driven, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's not forward looking. Again, it's not being, as we talk about, not the reality of the current situation in the world. I guess this is not to say a new regulation that you're saying. This is just that there's modifying the dollar amount, correct?
That's correct. That's going to go into effect in December. This is a pretty trendy thing. It just went into effect last week. So okay. One more of those undebated kind of things.
Yeah, it's done, and you know, they're another thing to help the individual versus the organization, making it tougher for folks to make profit. And be curious, the genesis of that number, you're right, those exact numbers, 47,476. So there must be some sort of cutoff or some stat somewhere where that's defining the middle class, or just, you know, maybe it hasn't been updated in 40 years. I don't know how old this regulation is.
It's been a long time. Been a while. So, you know, but that's, yeah, I'm sure computer modeling was going crazy, and we spend many millions getting those numbers.
All right. So whenever you read about or hear regulations, either new ones or ones being tweaked, you got to ask the question, how is this good for business? And in this case, it doesn't seem to be good for business from that standpoint. So
why can't we have a simple solution to it, Adam? Every time they pass a law, take one or two off the books.
It's a great solution, Jack. All right. Well, stay tuned. When we come back, we'll be sharing a small business success story for this week. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners. We're business coaches. We can help you get unstuck from all those how questions in your business.
Stay tuned for more Dirty Secrets of Small Business on Integrity Radio, WINT, 1330 AM, and online at WINTradio.com. That's ahead of me.
On board, I'm the captain. At Pat O'Brien Chevrolet, the truck you want is waiting for you. Over 1,100 new trucks to choose from. Silverados, Colorados, and Expresses, Equinoxes, Traverses, and Trax, Suburbans, and Tahoes, all on sale. We got them. Come get them at Pat O'Brien Chevrolet.
Your health is nothing to fool with. That's why when supplies are important, you should trust no one but the best. Greg Smolik with Best Solutions Home Medical. Greg carries mobility solutions for you or your loved one, like Jazzy electric scooters that he can bring to your home. They're lightweight, affordable, and you can rent to own.
Hi, I'm Greg Smolik from Best Solutions Home Medical Supplies and Equipment in Wycliffe. Call me for your scooter and free consultation, 216-254-4429, or visit Best Solutions Medical Supplies.com.
Of course, you take pride in your home and your lawn. Until dandelions pop up, the driveway needs edging, and weeds drive you crazy. You can do it yourself, but you really don't have time. Let Ward's Lawn Care and Landscape, with 29 years of experience providing honest, dependable, professional landscaping services, save you work and the hassle this summer, and for less than you think. With Ward's, you stop working and stop worrying. Call 440-942-1912 or visit wardslawncare.com. No work, no worries. Ward's.
Not only does WINT have the country's top national talkers like Sean Hannity, Dave Ramsey, and Laura Ingram, we've got some great local shows hosted by local people, too. For our complete programming lineup, visit WINTradio.com.
Do you want to be just as smart about technology as a room full of kids playing with their iPhones? How about adding bullet points to your LinkedIn profile that will boost your resume visibility and land you that dream tech job? Let's get smarter together. Listen to Tech Talk 2020 with me, Sanjay Parker, every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. We'll explore all things tech, current and future, and how to make technology work for you at home and in your business. That's Tech Talk 2020 with Sanjay Parker, Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. on Integrity Radio, WINT, 1330 a.m.
Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini with Maximum Value Partners, MVP. We're business coaches who help owners of small companies get unstuck from the state of how. Don't wrestle with all those how questions on your own. We can help. We love helping small business owners get unstuck.
Yes, we do. And that's a good segue into our next segment here, where we're going to share a small business success story of one of our clients.
We have a lot of those, you know that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they've been piling up over the last 15 years.
Oh, it's good to take little segments of these things. There's so many to share here. And today we're going to talk about, and first of all, before I get into it, I want to just reinforce again, when we talk about small business, we're talking about anywhere from 1 to 25 employees.
Wait a minute. I thought you were talking about somebody under 4'10".
Those are the wee businesses.
The
owners are big, but the companies are small. How about that? All right.
Okay, good.
So part we like to do, too, is when we talk about our success story here, a couple things. We'll frame it within our seven keys to success. And for this one, we're going to talk about a little bit about leadership stuff as well as some vision stuff. Let me set the scene here for this client that we're talking about. Here's the situation. And you'll notice I'm starting with the word how, right? So how do you tell your brother you cannot work with him anymore and that one of you needs to go?
Mm-hmm.
And then what do you do after he buys you out?
That was a fun client. That was how many years did we work with those guys?
We worked together with them for probably about 2.5 or 3 years.
You know, many of our relationships with our clients go on for years. Our most successful client we've been with going on 9 years. And the reason that is that they progress. And the changes that they're pondering with the how-to questions, we basically figure it out. And it takes a while, certainly does take a while, to change culture, to change attitudes. And it isn't a quick trip to the lawyer, you know. It's a heck of a lot more than that. But
no, and it's often the case, that as it was with this client. We'd been working with them about 6 months, maybe 8 months. And we'd been seeing them every week. And the one brother came to Jack and I and said, "Hey, I can't do this anymore." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "My brother and I were great brothers, but when we're in here, he says black, I say white, and he says it's just not right for the organization."
And we could see that, yeah, right away from the get-go.
But he was framing it right, and he was taking a very mature approach to it. Said, "Hey, that's not right for the organization." And he said, "Look," he said, "either he's got to go or I have to go. One of the two." He said, "And I'm okay with either of them." We said, "All right." Said, "So let us know when you're ready for that, because that's got to be something that you have to bring up. We can't bring this up." So we did a little role playing, got ready for it, and about three or four weeks later, he brought up in a meeting with his brother. Now his brother was totally caught off guard by this. You could tell by just the reaction. It's a very emotional discussion, as you can imagine. These were brothers and very good friends outside of work, and it was taking a strain on the relationship, and so He kind of dropped the bomb on his brother, said, "Hey, you know, here's the situation." He said, "Look, either you can buy me out or I'm going to buy you out." And his brother decided to buy him out. And
that was surprising. A lot of people don't take that action. You know, they go in different directions, often indecisive. But And it took a little while, but yeah,
right.
He decided to buy out his brother.
So we helped him through that process to get it, you know, taken care of, to get things structured, get things moving along. And with the one brother who was being bought out, we talked to him, about what he's going to do next. And, you know, we said, look, if you're looking to get a job, maybe we can make a few introductions for you. That's not necessarily what Jack and I specialize in. But if you're looking to either start a company or buy a company, we could probably help you there. He said, yeah, I'm looking to do one or both of those things. And he'd come to the conclusion that one of the things he wanted to do was, you know, he's still going to be working probably 50, 60-hour weeks, although he wasn't going to get paid overtime like we're talking
about.
Yeah,
but, I was just going to say that.
He didn't want to be going just to one place for that. He said, I'd like to have a handful of things that I'm involved in. And so over the course of about the next 18 months, we helped him do a couple of things. One is he started his own business doing a little bit of consulting work where he'd go in and help take a lot of the skills that he had from an administrative standpoint.
You know, that's a point, too, that a lot of small business owners that are stuck in a situation like that with a partner that they want to part company with, they have options that often, coming back to these advisors, you know, they aren't put into their mind with the how to do it. But, you know, you have options to leave a company with a bad partner and start up your own, either a consulting business or a multitude of ways to buy a small company. And often it doesn't take a lot of money.
Well, I think most of the reason why they don't do that, Jack, is, you know, they're so ensconced in their business that they don't often see or understand what skills that they do have. So often we'll point out to them or present situations like that. So in this case, our client had found a couple of places to kind of do a little bit of consulting. We actually had a couple of our clients that we introduced him to where he's helping out as well. And all along the while, too, he was searching for companies. Okay. And again, with that framework, hey, I want to find some place I don't have to go to all the time. And so he started looking at a bunch of different kind of things that he'd never really thought about before. He looked at a storage company, looked at a little ice cream hut type thing, and just different kind of companies.
And we have that ability. We've coached a number of clients on finding companies.
Sure.
It's like, well, geez, where do I start?
Right.
Well, we know where to start, and we know how to finish, and we know how to keep the stream going because there are so many opportunities out there. It's unbelievable.
Well, so this client, as he's searching around, turning over rocks, and he was able to narrow things down as he was kind of going through that process, he came across a company that does dental staffing. That's a company he wound up buying.
Oh, wait, let me interrupt you again.
Sure.
Here, because usually when the advisors try to coach or help somebody buy a company, they're going to ask that person to list out the requirements that he's looking for.
Right.
And so somebody's going to ponder weeks about trying to, well, what do I want? Very hard decision to make, quite frankly. But it's almost a useless effort and totally a useless piece of paper because you aren't going to find what you dream about in that fashion. And to Adam's point with his dental staffing company, nobody being Adam, I, and this client started out thinking that, hey, a dental staffing company might be the opportunity for you.
Of course, and his friends being, you know, as friends are, busting his butt about it. So, well, what do you know about, you know, dental staffing? And he said, well, other than going to the dentist every 6 months for the last 40 years, that's kind of what I know about dentistry, right? So he went in and bought this company, and he bought it right, which is always the key. You know, he didn't put a bunch of money down to start with. He put a little bit down, but he structured a payment over the next 3 years.
And we coached him on that. You know, it's important. It's important to buy it right. And that's the biggest step, especially if you aren't ensconced in the product knowledge. But you don't need to have the product knowledge to be a successful entrepreneur and run that company. You just don't.
So yeah, he bought this company, and he spent the first year, he was there kind of part-time. He was there for maybe 3 days a week. He had a good couple full-time employees that were there working the business and making things start to happen who had that knowledge while he was learning more about the industry like that. He was doing more market research to understand what the opportunities were and ways to start to kind of grow it. But again, it was a nice, solid business, and it was doing well. He said, I'm not going to tip the apple cart over. Let's keep this thing kind of running and doing well. In the meantime, he was doing his consulting on the side. He had another business that he'd started, you know, with his father, who had an idea that he wanted to kind of do in terms of some scooters and other things that were kind of going on. So he was having a chance to kind of dabble in these things. In the meantime, he and his brother still owned the building that the other company was in, and so they were still partners in that business, and things were okay there. And his brother was transitioning, as we were helping to coach his brother too, to get into that role of kind of being the sole guy in charge of the prior company. So they were able to achieve, you know, keeping, first of all, from their standpoint, they want to make sure that they as brothers stayed good. So they're having these very, very difficult discussions, helped to make that happen. The company that he got bought off from is doing very well. He was able to then go out and do his own thing. And they're able to kind of, again, get along. So very, very good success story on a lot of different fronts.
Multiple fronts, right. You know, it's amazing. Some people should never be married. And when they get divorced, they get along better than when they were married. It's amazing. It's amazing how that works. But yes, this was a great success story.
Yeah, the key here is that I want to make sure that for people that have a takeaway here, Jack, is you got to have those difficult discussions, especially when it's family. Have them. And so, you know, this didn't come up one day and he had the discussion. He had thought about it for a while and it had been months before he did. When he was ready, he had the discussion. We have a lot of other clients that we don't have that success story with that aren't having those discussions.
And they won't, that's right. Right? They won't have that discussion, so the organization can't advance and they sit in misery,
right.
Unfortunately.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us at this week's edition of Dirty Secrets of Small Business. If you have any questions before our next show, you can email them to radio@maximumvp.com or post at facebook.com/maximumvp or call us at 877-849-0670. That's 877-849-0670.
At Maximum Value Partners, we work hard to build long-term relationships and become not only your valued advisors, but also your trusted friends. You know, we love the small business owner, absolutely love them, and for a variety of reasons. You know, if you're looking to be successful, knowledgeable, and be that kind of business owner, to take your company anywhere you want to go, we can help.
In case you missed a part of this show or any of our previous shows, you can listen to them at your leisure any time of the day or night. You can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes and be sure to leave a review.